Hey, it's Tom here, and welcome back to another episode of the Investing with Tom podcast. Now, in this one, I speak to Kalichi Awaba, who is one of our 13-person strong margin of safety team for Movember and raising money for the Movember Foundation. As you can probably tell from some recent episodes, I'm trying to get a few of the guys from the Movember team on the podcast this month, and Kalichi is kind of the next one that is obviously coming on the podcast. So we covered a few aspects of Kalichi's financial journey in this episode. Kalichi actually moved to the US from Nigeria when he was younger. He was able to go to college or university, I guess we'd call it here, studied engineering, and then graduated and started earning more money than he's ever seen in his life, and went from graduating with no debt to suddenly landing himself in about $20,000 worth of credit card debt. So we talk through Kalichi's journey in terms of how that situation actually happened, how he got himself in that situation in the first place, how he sort of discovered the world of Dave Ramsey personal finance to help him work his way out of it, and how he thinks about investing and personal finance today. So it was really fun conversation with Kalichi. We actually also covered his journey on sort of the social media side of things. So Kalichi, for anyone that doesn't already know, has about 40,000 followers on TikTok. So he's popping up on various social media platforms, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and taking the world by storm. So it was good to get a bit of a different perspective in terms of the social media game. I'm kind of used to putting 10, 15, 20 minute videos on YouTube, and Kalichi is really crushing it with kind of the shorter form content over on TikTok. So with all that said, let's roll the episode, and I hope you enjoy. Kalichi, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to have you on. We connected probably early this year, I think it was. I was on your podcast, and you're now part of the Margin of Safety Movember team, which is fantastic as well. It's been good to hopefully get a few of the guys on the podcast through November. We're got about 10 days left, but we might be able to squeeze in another one or two. So how are you doing? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm definitely excited to be on here. I'm pumped to be on here, to be on the Investing with Tom podcast. I feel like a superstar when I get invited to this, when I got the message and was like, yeah, you should come on the podcast. I was like, yes, I finally made it. Made it on the Investing with Tom podcast. I'm feeling like $1,000 so, or $1 million.
$1 million.
Because of inflation. We got to inflate that number.
Yeah, well, it could be transitory. We don't know. I like it. Well, I've got lots of stuff I want to talk to you about, especially sort of what you're up to on social media, because I first came across you on YouTube and with your podcast, but you've also got quite the TikTok following as well, which I've put a few videos on TikTok, but it seems like an entirely different world. So I'm keen to get your thoughts on that. But maybe before we get to the TikTok discussion and everything, tell us a bit about your background and how you kind of got into personal finance and investing in the first place.
Yeah. So background on me, I am not in the finance world at all. I'm actually an engineer. I like to say that I'm an engineer by day, and then by night, I'm a wannabe Warren Buffett. Nice. We're all trying to get to that stage, but I'm learning more and more that I'm less Warren Buffett and a lot more not Warren Buffett. So, so that's what I do. But background in how I even got into this whole world of finance is graduated from college. Thankfully, parents helped me through the whole process. No debt, none of that, college student loans or anything like that. So I graduated making more money than I've ever seen in my entire life. And I was like, what do you do with it? And so, you know, as a dumb post-college student, I got a 2-bedroom apartment for one me, because why not? I got money. I can blow the money.
We balling now.
exactly. and then I was just, I look back and I'm like, what did I spend all that money on? And like, I got into a bunch of credit card debt. Like I was in close to $20,000 of credit card debt in less than a year. And I was like, where exactly did I spend all of this money on? And then I started hearing about this guy named Dave Ramsey. And actually, no, rewind a bit. In church, we had this whole thing on Dave Ramsey, Financial Peace University, where he like teaches people how to get out of debt. Of course, I got all the material, never used it. Thing was just in the corner somewhere collecting dust. I look over here because that's where the actual supplies are. But I remember when I had that thing, I never looked at it. I never paid attention to it. It was just in the corner. And then one day, I don't know what happened. I woke up one day and I was like, why can I not do the things that I want to do? Why do I always seem like I'm having to pay something off all the time? And so that really got me, that woke me up. And then I started paying attention to my finances, got out of debt a year later. And it's, I guess the rest is history after that. Is I just got into it and started learning more about businesses. And I was like, whoa, this is interesting stuff. And then that got me into the whole world of investing. And then that got me into the whole world of like value investing and all this stuff that we love to talk about so much.
Yeah, nice. So what were you spending money on to get into 20 grand worth of credit card debt?
Oh my gosh. So at the time I was dating somebody and we were doing long distance relationships. So travel was like a huge part of it. So travel all the time to see each other. And that took up a large part of it. But then getting an apartment, furnishing the apartment with stuff that honestly I didn't need, buying random stuff. I'm a big tech head as well. I love tech stuff. And so like when I got out of college, all the stuff that I had seen everyone talk about in every single tech video, all of a sudden I wanted to buy every single thing. And so I was buying all of these things that, to be honest, now I can't even tell you where they are. If not, they're broken or I've thrown it away or I've given it away or something. So that took up a lot of my money. And that's, I think those were basically, and then the other thing is, honestly, I would say like eating out was probably a large portion of my money as well. Just out of laziness, not because I couldn't cook, just because I didn't want to cook. And also I hated the job I was working out. So retail therapy was a regular thing for me to make me feel just a little bit better about myself when it comes to life in general. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. So what was it? You need to get on some of those Graham Stephan like credit card churning or whatever it's called to get those travel points.
I wish. That's like now I'm afraid of credit cards because when I first got my first credit card, I was like all about rewards and everything. But what happened was like when you have an interest rate of 20% and you're only getting back a cash back of like 2%, are you really doing yourself any favors? At that point, I didn't really understand it. All I was like, yo, but you can get 2% back. Oh my gosh. And it was like, yo, but you're costing yourself 20% on the back end. So yeah. And I didn't really understand how to use credit cards properly at that point in time. Now I'm just so afraid of credit cards. Like if I'm paying anything with credit cards, literally the next day, I'm paying it off immediately. Like I'm making sure I have the cash for it. And I'm just using the credit card just because it's the best option for rewards or whatever, but I'm paying it off right away because I hate that feeling of like, I'm like, I am never going back in debt. I'm never starting this whole journey all over again. So,
Yeah, I like it. I think I'm probably guilty of talking too much about investing and not enough about personal finance, maybe on my YouTube channel, because there's some basic stuff like, there's some basic stuff like we're talking about here where, you know, certain people are probably fine with credit cards, like a Graham Stephan type who has, I don't know, probably 15 credit cards at this point just to get all the points. I think he's like the perfect person to rip off credit card companies because he's always paying those things off, capturing all the rewards. But some people can't do that. Like I'm probably where you are now where, I have one credit card because credit cards aren't like this crazy, widely advertised thing here in New Zealand. Like we don't have like I have what's called an AirPoints credit card. So I guess similar to getting like travel miles in the US, I get a small percentage back as like AirPoints dollars that I can spend with in New Zealand here. Gotcha. But like a 2% cashback card or 3% cashback or something would be like unheard of here. We don't have these like that just doesn't exist. So I'm the type of person that like, if I can get a few AirPoints, that's good enough for me. But I'm like, I've watched a few Dave Ramsey videos. I don't agree with everything he says, but I kind of like the core message of what he's doing. So I think I've got a little Dave in the back of my head every time I sort of swipe the credit card or whatever. And I'm like, you know, the bill's not due for a month, but I'm paying it off like as I'm walking out of the store with cash. I'm just transferring it straight across to the card so I can get those points, but I have no balance.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's literally it. Because right now, I'll say America is a very consumer centric. You were saying there's nothing like the cashback stuff in other countries. And that's part of the good thing about for me is I'm Nigerian. So I grew up in Nigeria and then I moved to the US. And that helped me like snap out of things. But America is very much like everything is built on this idea of buy more, own more, bigger is better, like get the largest, biggest, spend the most amount of money. And so like part of the enticing thing is what they put in front of you is like, yo, but you can get like 3%, you can get 30,000 points. Like they put all these large numbers in front of people's faces. And especially when you're in college as well. My first credit card was when I was in college. And the thing they do in college is like, yo, you can get free pizza if you just sign up for this thing. You can get a free t-shirt if you just sign up for this thing. You can get like, or they'll give you like a gift card to go to like Starbucks or something. And so it's all these little like dopamine hits that they've, the credit card industry is so wise, like all these little dopamine hits that they keep hitting people with that ends up just being like such a hard thing for most of us to grapple with and decide, yo, I don't want to deal with this. And let me make sure I'm taking care of the bigger picture stuff rather than shooting myself in the foot on all these other little things.
Yeah, it's a little crazy sometimes looking at America from the outside. And I have a fairly sizable chunk of my investment portfolio in the US, but I've never actually been to the US, but I feel like I know it pretty well because we get exposed so much to like, I don't know if this is bad to be getting my understanding from TV shows and movies and stuff, but I feel like that's where a lot of it comes from. And I watch like a lot of US YouTube channels and things as well. But you see these people that there's a few people actually on TikTok. We should get to that discussion shortly, but there's a few people on TikTok that I follow that they're like New Zealanders. They've gone to America and they're just making this video series that's going viral on TikTok about crazy things in the US that like I never expected. And one of them's like, you know, the credit cards are everywhere. Advertising's everywhere. Mm-hmm. You go to McDonald's and order a large and it's probably like twice the size of a New Zealand large. Everything just kind of stepped up a few levels.
That is so. I remember when I first moved to the United States and I was like, everything was just like so big. Like the cup sizes felt like bucket sizes. It is weird. Like when you actually like, now I'm desensitized to it. But when I first moved here, everything was like, what is this? Like, talk about culture shock to the upteenth degree. It's just like, this is a different world. Like America is a. It's a very different, weird, special place sometimes. And sometimes it can be not so special. So it's it's just a special, special little land that we have over here.
Yeah. So how old were you when you moved to the States? Are you able to talk about that story?
Yeah, I was 12 when we moved. So my dad got a job here. And so we moved when I was 12 years old and I've been here since then. I've been back to Nigeria one time. So I've been here, what is that? In 2006, just about 13 years or so.
Yeah, nice. So you've still got family, presumably, like quite a bit of family in Nigeria and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. So my dad actually goes back and forth now. But everybody else, like my mom and my siblings are here, but to be honest, my family's all over the world at this point. I got family all over the place. Some people in the UK, some people in Austria, some people, they're kind of all over the place, but I still got a good amount of family in Nigeria as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. I don't know a lot of, this is a random aside, but I don't know a lot of famous Nigerian people. The only two people that come to mind are Kamaru Usman and Israel Adesanya, both UFC fighters. You fans of those guys?
I don't watch the UFC that much, honestly. My brother's trying to get me on it. He's the one he's always like, yo, we need to watch this fight and we need to watch that fight. And I know those names just because they're Nigerian and they rep being Nigerian all the time whenever they're taking over fights. Yeah. And they're really good. But apart from that, I don't know much about them. I love their antics in the ring. I watched some of those videos where they like show them backflips. And I think one of them is really into anime and it's like, love just that aspect of it. But overall, I haven't watched too much UFC. I want to get more into it though.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah. Israel Adesanya is like a hybrid of us because he's like a Nigerian living in New Zealand. And now he's like a super famous fighter. There you go.
Perfect. Because one day I can get there, come to New Zealand, and then I'll be like, yeah, I came to visit Tom today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the invitation's open. You feel free to come over anytime.
Let me just text you like, yo, man, I'm coming around the corner. Expect me in about 15, 16 hours.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. New Zealand's just far from everywhere, really. We can get to Australia in about, well, if you go to sort of Melbourne or Sydney, you can get there in kind of 3.5 hours on a plane, but if you want to go pretty much anywhere, or you can get to the Pacific Islands in about that time, maybe a little more as well. Yeah. But if you want to go to like the UK or the States, you're on some long haul flights at that point. That's something I've been considering doing for the Berkshire meeting. Actually, I really want to go there. And I feel like I should go sooner than later with just the age of the people that are at that meeting. So we'll do that one of these days. Dudes.
Hey, whenever you decide to pull up, I'm going to just find my way over there. If you decide, wherever you decide to land, I'm going to just be like, where are you, Tom? We just check in that way. So,
yeah, I think that'd be a pretty cool place for some like investing and personal finance YouTubers to meet up, actually.
Oh, for sure.
Be at a Berkshire meeting.
That would be so much fun. That would be so much fun to see everybody together.
Yeah. And then you'd just see like, you know, Monish Babarai, Guy Spear and stuff just wandering past in the background. That'd be amazing.
It would be the ultimate nerd. It's like when people go to like Comic-Con, that would be our version of Comic-Con. You see all these nerd value investors out here talking about all these different companies and whatnot. But it would be awesome. Yeah. It would be so much fun.
It would be cool. So, are you still following a lot of the Dave Ramsey type content on the personal finance side of things, or have you evolved a bit from that now?
Yeah, I don't really follow Dave Ramsey anymore. Like, it was great. I always tell people, like, with everything in life, you take the meat, spit out the bone. So as you learn more, you grow more, you understand more, you can do more, and you can kind of leave some things to the side and pick up some other things and go on your merry way. And I think even I'll say, like, one thing I've learned with so many people is the idea of being able to change your mind. I love a quote from, I think it's Maynard Keynes, who says, as the information changes, I change my mind. And I love that quote because we need to have the flexibility to always add things to our repertoire, but also let things go as well. And Dave Ramsey was one of those. I would tell anybody who's trying to get out of debt, like, Dave Ramsey is it. Like, if you're trying to get out of debt, Dave Ramsey is your best friend. Like, he will push you and make you do all the things that you don't want to do, but he will get you to that goal that you're looking for. On the other hand, though, after that, it's kind of like, I'm not a fan of a lot of his idea of investing, a lot of his strategy on buying houses, all of that stuff. Then it becomes like, okay, you're kind of, he ends up holding me back, in my opinion, he ends up holding a lot of people back from being able to pursue like actually building wealth goals. And he's great at getting you out of debt, but for when it comes to wealth building, not a fan of Dave Ramsey as far as that's concerned. But I love it when it was like, yo, I need to get this debt and kill this thing and move on with my life. But after that, it was just kind of like, all right, I need to learn more, experience more, and understand more for myself rather than just following him blindly. Because for the longest time, I literally just like, he advises, you need to get a financial advisor. You need to get all of these mutual funds is like it. You can never do anything else but mutual funds and pay these exorbitant fees. And I was like, yeah, go, Dave, go. Yeah. And I was all up on the Dave bandwagon. But then, you know, I don't know what happened. I don't know how I learned about like, I took a class. That's what it was. I took a business class for my master's that I was doing 2 years ago. And in the class, our teacher was talking about mutual funds and then talked about index funds. And then he made us do a research. And during that research, I was like, wait a minute. 2% versus 0.02%. What am I paying in my mutual funds? And then I started digging into my mutual funds to understand like, what are the fees that I've been paying? And then I was like, yo, this thing is costing me a fortune. Like, I need to figure stuff out on my own. It's like, I got time. I guess I can learn. It's not, this is not like computer science or like anything that I really do at work that's way more complicated. This is not that hard. And so I took the time and I just like spent some time. I sat down with my financial advisor. And then she couldn't really tell me anything when I was like asking questions. And I was like, then why am I paying you all this money if you can't really help me at all? And then it was just kind of like, all right, I'm done. And then I just decided, transferred out all my stuff and started figuring stuff out on my own. So Dave Ramsey, great for debt, but then all the other stuff he'd be saying, I'm just like, let's not do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree. I think Dave Ramsey is great for the type of people that need like a financial intervention or have just got themselves into some crazy situation. Yeah. And you can look up YouTube videos that are like, you know, top 10 craziest Dave Ramsey calls and stuff like that. If you want to be entertained, that's a great place to go. Like people just with, like some of them are actually quite sad, like the level of debt and stuff they've gotten into. Yeah. But, yeah, the responses are entertaining, and I've similar to you, I think I've kind of moved on definitely from the investing perspective. I don't know if I was ever quite on board
without a doubt.
Dave there.
I'm like, if you're on here and you're still a Dave Ramsey person, you invest, and I'm like, yo, you probably get a completely different story once you start listening to either me or Tom or anybody else when we start talking about investment, because he's on something else.
Yeah, and I still steal a few Dave Ramsey quotes from time to time. Like if our sort of budget's a bit tight for the next week, and we need to pull back on a few things, I'll just kind of like wander past my girlfriend and be like, "Beans and rice, rice and beans," and just kind of just carry on. That's great.
I mean, it's definitely a point.
she probably hates it, but I think it's funny.
I mean, I love it. It's hilarious, but you know, you're living with her, so you know, you got to play that game wisely.
Absolutely. Well, tell us what you're up to on TikTok. What do you got happening over there?
So, so TikTok, I love telling stories and talking about investments. And it just kind of started randomly. I won't say randomly randomly. After we went into lockdown, it was very much just, okay, I don't have anything to do. There's this new platform, TikTok. I was like, why not post a video? And so I posted like this random video on gas and like how I was getting discounts on gas. And then that video, it didn't blow up or anything, but it got like 400 views. And I was like, what? This one video? And then I was like, you know what? Let me try. And then I made like these terrible, when I say terrible, awful skits. Like I went back and I watched one like the other day and I was like, oh my gosh, this is awful. Like, why did anybody watch it? But one of those actually, like, for some reason during the lockdown, it just picked up and I had like 100,000 views on it. And I was like, whoa, there's something here. Like, this is interesting. And then after that, it's just been like, I just keep creating content about investing, about businesses, about personal finance. And just basically the whole idea is I want to educate people, but I also want to make, because sometimes finance can be so kind of intimidating for a lot of people. So I wanted it to be kind of a fun entryway for a lot of people to get access and learn about the stock market, learn about businesses, learn about inflation, learn about all these things that some of us know off the top of our heads, but for a lot of people, it's scary to get that intro to. So I wanted it to be fun, interactive, and just get people interested in finance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. And it's interesting. I've put up a couple of TikToks and I think, I might have three videos on there or something. If anyone wants to look it up, it's just Investing with Tom on TikTok. That's, it's weird. Like, it seems like, well, I'm obviously kind of used to YouTube where for the most part, the views that you get on a typical video are reasonably consistent. Like obviously there's fluctuations. Some videos do better, some do worse, but it's a relatively tight band most of the time. But TikTok seems a little more like a video can just completely flop or it can get a million views. Is that kind of how it works?
Yep. TikTok is it's a viral platform. It's all about virality on TikTok. It's not really... Like I tell people, like, TikTok is one of those platforms where you try to get an audience more than build an audience. Because generally it's not like YouTube, where YouTube, you can make a video today and then 3 years down the road, people can start finding it all over again. It doesn't work that way on TikTok. It's very much like every day, whatever the news is for that day, that needs to be the thing you're talking about and driving for and pushing forward. It's such a weird platform. It's all about like, which I don't like this about TikTok, because it's also like very much about attention deficit more than like attention grabbing. And so you have to like learn how to twist your content in a way that it forces people to pay attention for more than 2 seconds. Because on TikTok, it's like that first second, people are just like bang, 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 just sliding and going to town on that thing. And it has to take something special to like, oh, let me stop and watch like a 30 second clip. But it's a weird platform, and it's like sometimes you can post the exact same video, like literally the exact same style of video. One day it just does absolutely nothing, and then the next day it just blows up, and it's like, I didn't change anything. Like, what exactly happened? Like, nothing I did change, but it's an interesting platform.
Yeah, it's a strange place. I agree with you. Like, it seems like, I mean, when I'm scrolling through TikTok, it's like if a video hasn't got me in the first like 3 seconds, I'm carrying on, which is kind of strange. I feel like I'm just some drugged out machine, just kind of lying back scrolling like, just mindlessly. And if I find something interesting, I go, oh, let's give this one 20 seconds of my life and see if it works out. It's really strange.
It forces, one thing TikTok has done for me is for even when I create YouTube videos now, it's forced me to like, I've really come to respect people's time a lot more on videos, because I'm like, if I'm not entertaining somebody in this clip, like, why should they spend this time with me? So I'm like trying to, if you watch any of my videos, you notice like faces are popping in, pictures are coming in, stuff is floating all over the place, because I'm trying to keep people's attention throughout the span of a video. And that's part of like TikTok. It's like every clip I try to, like, even on TikTok, every clip is about 3 seconds. So it's like 3 seconds go, 3 seconds go, 3 seconds go, three. And it's like changing sides or stuff like that. And I mean, to a degree, for the human race, I'm not sure I like the idea, because we don't need this short attention spans to be like,
we've got enough impatience thing. Already.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you find it tricky sort of balancing the entertainment versus education? Like, from my perspective, I sometimes struggle to get an idea across in a 15-minute YouTube video, let alone a 30-second TikTok. How do you think about that?
So some videos are strictly just to make a joke. Some videos are strictly just for entertainment purposes, and it's laced. But in that video is laced with like information that can help you. So I made a video one time where it was like, I was talking about index funds, and I was like, what if you could have the best basketball players in the world? And if you were, it was like, what if you're picking a team of 5 for basketball, and you could pick any 5 players in the world to like go up against anybody? And basically the idea of the video was like, this is what you get if you invest in an index fund. And so it was like laced with information in there. But the basketball thing grabbed people's attention, because they're like, well, of course, I'm going to pick Michael Jordan. I'm going to pick LeBron James, you know, that type of thing. You grab people in there, and then you rope them in, and you talk about index funds. This is something that is extremely boring and nobody wants to talk about, because it's not about to explode in like tomorrow. And so it's trying to like lace these. Somebody said that a lot of times we create content in order to like kind of infiltrate or ghost infiltrate people's mind and kind of inception it in there so that they don't know they're learning, but they're learning as they're watching the video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. They are entertaining. Like I think I saw one you did with the meeting of the $1 trillion market cap companies, and you have like Apple and Microsoft and so on sitting there. And then you have this like young punk Tesla just turn up with like rookie numbers, right?
Yeah, that was a fun video. Like I don't even know how I came up with that thing. I don't know how this brain works sometimes, but it was basically, and that's the other thing, like that business information, sometimes you read business articles and they're so boring. And so I'm like taking those information tidbits and personalizing the company. So like given each company like some kind of personality. Apple is the type of company that wants to dominate everybody and wants to lead everything. So you give them the personality of being the head of the table. Everybody listens to what Apple has to say. And then you have Google, who's always is the sneaky neighbor that wants to know every single thing about you. So you give that personality to Google, and you look at Microsoft. It's the one that's there, but nobody really likes Microsoft like that. It's kind of the old dog. It's kind of around, wears a sweatshirt. We know, it's like, it's there, but it's yeah. And so there's Microsoft, and then you have Tesla, which is the new kid that is trying to take the space of Amazon, who's Amazon is supposed to be the guy that's running everything. So, you know, you take all of that together and it's just like, oh, let's make some kind of ridiculous skit that makes no sense if you don't know anything about these companies. But
yeah,
it's still, it can be very funny when you just put it all together.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, I'm blanking on the numbers here, but I saw some stat in New Zealand pop up yesterday about, you know, they did a survey about how well people think that school taught them about financial education and that sort of thing. And it just doesn't exist. And as I understand it, at least it's pretty similar in the US. So the more that we can kind of find creative ways, I think, to pull people in, the better. Yeah. Like, I'm probably more towards the like longer form, maybe educational stuff. And maybe I need to do something more creative to pull other people in. But the more eyeballs we can get on this, like solid information about boring topics like index funds, like to me, that's not boring if you run it through a compound interest calculator, which is a boring thing to do. But once you see the numbers coming out, it's not that boring to me. But you need to convince people to kind of take a few seconds of their day to look at it, right?
I would say like you and I are very similar in the sense like we kind of find the money to be like this game that we can beat to a degree. Like we kind of play money and we want to expound on it. We're like, yo, I can make like 2 times my money. I can make 3 times my money. I can make like, we see it as, it's not really a game, but we see it as kind of like a game that we can beat and make better over time. A lot of people don't see it that way. A lot of people see money more as like, I need to use this thing to buy this thing because I need this thing for it. And it's just a different mindset. Like if somebody was telling me like we have savers and we have spenders, and it depends on the mindset that you have. And we have this saver mindset. And so I think it's opportune for us to share that knowledge in any way that we can possibly do it with everyone around us and with those, with other people to get them into it, to just show like, yo, this is a wonderful world that you are missing out of. And if you just join us in this world, I promise you things will be so much better for you.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, I mean, I've always been a very mathematical person, and I'm assuming you're probably pretty similar being an engineer. Like I sort of always view things in like a opportunity cost kind of lens. Like there's a balancing act, like, right? So some people are way extreme and just won't spend a cent on anything and will just almost be like miserable in order to save up for retirement in 40 years or whatever. And I think that's the wrong answer, but I also think just spending everything and even maybe spending more than you earn and getting into credit card debt like you did, you know, at one point there is the wrong way to go as well. I think it's probably a balancing act somewhere in the middle. And yeah, like just the basic maths of like, even if you set aside some pretty small percentages of your income, that can kind of snowball into some very meaningful numbers over time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think part of it is also like, I got lucky with like my mom and the way my mom raised us growing up. Like I know I later on got into credit card debt and put myself in trouble, but like even growing up, one of the things my mom made us do was if we wanted a new video game, she was not about to buy it for us. Cause first of all, she hated video games. So she was not about to be the one to be like, oh yeah, you want a new video game? Here you go. She forced us, like I had to mow lawns to get money and then save up to buy that thing I wanted. So even with that, even just trying to teach people even that aspect of like, hey, you want this thing? Instead of just swiping this card and going into debt for this, like how about just saving? Because a lot of the times, one thing that I learned about myself and people in general is just like a trip. It's like a lot of times we think about just getting to the destination, but the trip in and of itself, the expectation of that thing is usually what really gets us going a lot more for whatever it is that we're trying to get to. So I think just getting people to anticipate things more and like actually like go through the process of getting excited, like, oh my God, I'm putting $20 towards this thing or putting $20 towards my, like stuff like that. Get them excited about that concept of investing, of money or finances. All of this stuff is something that I would love more people to just do. And I think that would be so great.
Yeah, for sure. I have a friend and I was trying to explain like opportunity costs, like, you know, if you buy $1,000 iPhone, that's can be $30,000 in 40 years time or whatever. And it got to the point where it was just like a running joke that anytime he was talking about spending money on something, I wouldn't even say anything about it. I just reply with a screenshot of a compound interest calculator. That was my reply. And I think he got the point eventually, so I've stopped doing it, but that was kind of a funny thing to do for a while there. But yeah, I mean,
that is good.
Yeah, like at a certain point, and I guess even having the investing discussion is kind of like a privileged perspective in many ways, because we're like, what do I do with all this extra money that I can't spend, you know? But yeah, like at a certain point, you know, if you have a decent job and make a decent living, you've kind of got all your bases covered. And then I think a lot of people do just start to spend money on stupid stuff that doesn't add a lot of value to their life. Like for me, I'll spend just about anything on like fishing equipment, because that's something that gives me joy. And I try to buy reasonable quality stuff that's going to last a while. But like outside of that, there's not a whole lot of stuff that I want that I have the means to buy, at least right now. But if I do invest for a long period of time, maybe when I'm old and retired, I can upgrade from buying a new fishing rod to buying a boat or something, because I sacrificed a little bit in the shorter term, right? That's how I think about it anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you on that. It's like now, after going through my phase of blowing up in a sense, and then coming back to having some kind of reason, now I barely, like, my mom is always like, Glitchy, you don't spend your money on anything. Like, why don't you spend your money on anything? I'm like, I don't really like have much. Like, if it's not a tech thing, and the problem with like most things that are tech now that I want cost like $2,000, $4,000. And so it's so much harder for me to be like, I'm just going to swipe my card and spend $2,000. Like, no, I have to really think about it. But for a lot of people, it's like, I think my sister, for example, I talk like me and her, I've become like her financial advisor in a sense, because initially she would just buy stuff like shoes and clothes, and she would just like, and it was a thrill. Like what we ended up figuring out, it was like, there's a thrill of finding a deal. Like for her, it was like, I go to the store and going through all the clothes and all of this stuff was a thrill to find something that's down like 90%. But even if you're spending money that you know you need for something else, you ended up, even if it's 90% off, it's still going to cost you. And so we ended up, what we came up with is, I always tell people is like you said, you spend any amounts of money on fish and stuff. I told her, like, if you want to do that, that's cool. Like, it's good to find things you enjoy in life. Let's set a little bit of money that you can spend every month towards this thing. And then that way you're not impeding yourself in other areas as well. And so that's one thing I've started talking to people. And then the other thing, you talked about it a little bit, is I learned this aspect. I read two blogs from a guy named, or the blog is called Dollars and Data, from a guy named Nick Majuli. And his concept is you can invest and then stop. And I love the way he put it, because he compared two different people, and he compared the first person invested like $10,000 a year, which by the way, I'm not going to make that sound like it's such an easy thing to do. Like, not everybody has an extra $10,000 to just be investing, but he was just comparing two different people, like their same job, they graduated from college at the same time, made the same amount of money. One person decided from 25 to age 35, they were going to invest $10,000 every single year without stopping. And then the other person at age 35 decided to start investing at age 35. And from 25 to 35, they were like, I'm not going to do it. And so they didn't invest anything from age 25 to 35, which was 10 years. And then you can compare both of them. At age 35, the guy who started investing at 25 stopped, because, you know, as we get older, we have more responsibilities. You know, some of us get married, we have kids, houses, all of this stuff. Our parents get older, taking care of all this stuff starts ramping up. And so, you know, for various reasons, you might want to stop. But the crazy thing about it is the person who only invested in a 10-year period, $100,000 with a 10% return, ends up coming out with like almost like $3 million or something like that, if we use a 10% return. And then you compare it to the other person who starts investing at 35 and invests all the way until they turn 65, and they don't even make, they make like 1 point something million, and they invested like $300,000. And so you compare both of these people and you're like, yo, this is one thing I started trying to convince people is like, you don't have to invest forever. Like you can just make this small sacrifice for a short period of time. And then you don't have to do anything ever again. Just think about it as a short down payment that you're making on your future self, for your future self. And so that's kind of, I actually made a TikTok about it and it kind of took off. And a lot of people are like, oh, I've never thought about it that way, which is always great when you make a video like that. And it's like, oh yeah, I feel good today. But yeah, it's just that concept of like, you don't have to invest forever. You don't have to save forever. You don't have to do all these things forever. You just have to do it for a certain period of time. And then you get to a point where you just like allow compounding to do the heavy lifting for you and just, you just enjoy life. You don't have to do anything else. You just enjoy life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. It's sort of exponential growth and compounding is a weird thing. Like, like those numbers don't even seem to make sense, but you can double check them and they definitely do. Like the human mind really struggles with the idea of compounding and exponential growth. But I mean, just look at like, obviously Warren Buffett is like the most successful example ever, but you know, he was buying Berkshire Hathaway stock at like $9 a share for the Class A shares, $10 a share, something like that in the 60s. And all he's really done, not to say that this is a small achievement, but all he's done is just continually like reinvest all the earnings from his businesses. And he's just like kept doubling and doubling and doubling and doubling and doubling. And, you know, 10 becomes 20, becomes 40, 80, 160, so on. And the numbers just get like obscenely large to the point now where those same shares are, what, $430,000 today or something? It's
crazy.
It's wild.
It's so crazy. Like we think in terms of, I saw a different, I think I tweeted this out where it's like, we think in days are long and decades are short.
Yes.
It's like, it's hard for us to think in terms of time. Like our time perspective is horrible as human beings. Like we think everything that's happening today is the most important thing that's ever going to happen in our entire lifetime. It's hard for us and our memory sucks. So we forget everything that happened yesterday. And then the future is unknown. And so it's kind of hard to decipher what might happen in the future. And so when we put all those together, the most important time is the present. And then we overrate everything that's happening in the present. And so when you just put all of those things together, it's like, it's just hard for people to put into concept of like, yeah, if I do this, eventually it will do well. But what about today? Right? Like, it's like, yeah, I get what you're saying, but what about right now? Because right now I want this thing that is looking at me in the face because I just saw this commercial for it and I can click buy right now and make myself feel good for about 5 seconds. So it's a very weird time period that we live in.
Yeah. And sometimes you get the classic comment like, oh, why are you doing all this stuff? You could die tomorrow. And yeah, I guess. But I mean, if we play out this lifetime of collegiate investing with Tom 100 times over, you know, probably like 99 times out of 100, I'm not going to die tomorrow. You know, like statistically, exactly. People are living pretty long these days. And I'd prefer to maybe put a little aside in my 20s to have a reasonable retirement as opposed to having nothing and just kind of scraping by and living till 110 or something with nothing. You
know? It's like, what is the, and this is why I like, which is why I don't like, there's, you know, there's different types of the FIRE movement. And I don't like the extreme side of the FIRE movement of financial independence, retire early movement of like, put everything towards investing. And I heard somebody speak to this and I think that just put everything in perspective because I at one point I was getting closer and closer to that idea of like, yeah, compounding money, save the money. And somebody was talking, I was listening to a podcast and they said, yeah, I was big on like saving for retirement. And then I got to retirement and then I was diagnosed with cancer. Luckily, the person survived. But all of a sudden it was like everything they've been putting off for so long just hit. And it was like, what was the point, right? And I think it's like, that's why I say like, you can do both. You talked about fishing. I talk about like soccer is a big thing for me. Soccer and tech is a big thing for me. And so it's like, and traveling to see family and all of that is a big thing for me. And so it's like, I'm always going to put money aside. It's like people, I don't know why we can't have both. And a lot of us like to think in either or statements. And it's like, no, you can do both. Like it may take a little longer for some things, but you can definitely do both. And you're a testament to this. I'm a testament to this. There's so many people that are testaments to this. And it's just to share that idea of like, yo, you can do, you're not going to die tomorrow. But even if you did, you still, there will be things that you enjoyed while you were here on this earth that, you know, you would have been happy to have experienced. And so don't ever, I like to tell people, don't ever think it's either or. Most of the time it's both and, like, enjoy life mm-hmm. and save for retirement. You don't have to pick either one of these two options.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Well, if you do come across some money, you feel like, not saving and you decide to fly to New Zealand, I'll take you fishing and then we can, both yeah. enjoy spending a bit of our money. I don't know if you've caught a fish in your life or whatever, but, we'll get you
once.
Nice. Once. We're talking fresh water or salt water.
Honestly, I'm going to put it, I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to fishing. I was with a friend.
Were you in the ocean, Kalichi? Or was it a lake?
I was not in the ocean.
Okay.
It was a little lake.
We will be in the ocean.
Right. Oh, okay. I'll be a lot different.
Yeah. There'll be waves and everything.
Yeah, I was almost falling asleep where we went fishing. I was like, oh, something's there. Something is there. Okay, let me start doing something. What do I do? What do I do? Tell me what to do. Yeah. Not going to have that opportunity. I'll be like, oh, God, what is going on right now?
Yeah, I hope you don't get seasick, but we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah.
They make pills for that these days, so you'll be fine.
Just pop one of those bad boys. Yeah. I'll be on cloud nine.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, we should probably pull this conversation back to investing for a little bit. Do you want to maybe talk investment strategy a little and kind of how you think about that?
Yeah, sure. So I have something called have you heard of the Pareto principle?
Rings a bell, but refresh my memory.
Basically, it's like the 80-20 rule, where it's like 80%, 20% of your efforts come from or give you 80% of your results, or 80% of efforts lead to 20%. So I kind of took that principle and I was like, I kind of like this idea and I want to use it in my investing strategy. So most of my money just go into index funds through my Roth IRA and my 401k. That's like most of my investments is in that. So every month money is going to go in there, and that's basically been just chugging along in the background. I barely look at it. It's set up automatically. Everything is just doing its own thing. Every once in a while, I check it to make sure like things are good, but I don't like looking at it. Then on the 20% side is where I get into investing in single stocks, investing in crypto, investing in those kind of things. And it's basically the idea of like, if I cannot with my 20% beat out the 80%, then I suck at this whole investing thing. And so that's the general idea of my entire investing portfolio. And then recently, even when I talk about like crypto, investing in crypto, it was something that I was very, very staunchly against for a long time. And I was not going to do it. I was not going to touch it. And then I was talking to my little brother and he explained a few things to me and he pointed me in some directions and I did a little bit of research on it. And then a friend of mine also just talking to me, and he was like, yo, you have to, and he said something that kind of touched me, and he said, give yourself room for luck in your investments. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, he's just as much a value investor, if we want to call ourselves value investors, but he's just as much a value investor where he pays attention to like, I'm not just going to buy Rivian because hype. Like, I'm not touching that thing because of hype. But at the same time, he's also the type of person who understood the idea of some of the things that were happening in the background for crypto. And he was like, give yourself room for luck. Like, a lot of times he was like, we are so staunchly against these things that we live ourselves where these things can happen and kind of blow our entire portfolio out of the water, but we don't give ourselves that room for luck. And so that got me thinking. I was like, well, okay, with you saying all that. So I got a little bit into crypto, but I'm still scared of crypto. So really, I only do like stable coins and USDC and then a little bit in Ethereum. But then that's basically my investing strategy. And just like everybody else's basis of my single stocks is a stock is a business and all that good stuff that we learned from Benjamin Graham. But I'm a lot more Peter Lynch than Benjamin Graham, where I don't mind investing in a company that has a crazy growth rate or has a crazy PE ratio, just because like I see the company, if it looks like if whatever it is I'm paying today, this company is going to do way better than this 10 years down the line, then I'm just like, prices is as much as price matters, which every time I do this in the back of my head, I hear Tom going, margin of safety, margin price of safety. It matters. Margin. And I'm just like, and then, you know, I would like sit on it and really think about it again. And then I'll end up like, sometimes I end up not investing. And then, and it saved me. It's definitely has saved me a lot in the last year of just that little thing ringing in the back of my head. Like, you got to still take it into consideration.
I feel like the grumpy old man sometimes like that. No.
Hey, it's definitely helped me, because then it's like on the other side, I'm just like, whew, dodge that bullet. And it's, you know, because it's easy for us to come up with all these theses of like, yeah, this is why this company is going to do well and keep doing well and da da da, and run off all this stuff. But then when you come back to reality, like you say, and everybody says, it comes down to how much money is this company actually making? And if they're not making any money, it's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is insane. And so that still plays a ring. But sometimes some companies just defy reality in just the idea of what they're trying to build. So, for example, I'll say like one of those companies for me is a company called Roblox. Wildly overvalued. I'm not even going to like joke. The company is overvalued by any stretch of the imagination. However, I wanted to be part of the journey. So I just bought a little bit. I took a little nibble in it. And then I was just like, apart from this, I'm not touching this. Now, since then, I thought it was overvalued. And now it's like doubled since where I bought it from. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. But at the same time, it goes back to that point that my friend was saying of like, give yourself room for luck. And, you know, it's a company, when Facebook made its announcement, it just kind of skyrocketed it to the moon. And that helped a little bit. But again, I nibble is what I'm trying to say on like crazy overvalued companies, just because I want to be a part of the story and I want to see the company actually do well going into the future. So, but all the other stuff, I mean, I've used you, I've learned from a lot of your videos, a lot of new money was like the first value investing video I ever watched. And that's how I found your channel. And that has helped me like create strategies of how to invest. And like I said at the very beginning of this, is at the end of the day, I'm always taking stuff in, spitting stuff out, trying to evolve and kind of understand more about what I'm doing when it comes to investing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. It's I like that approach. I mean, I'm definitely heavier into picking the individual businesses than you are with the 80% indexing and so on. But
yeah,
I think it's a really good strategy. Like, there's a lot of people out there that almost like try to overcomplicate things and try to be a hero and like crank out massive returns, but they take a lot of risk kind of doing mm-hmm. that. So,
yeah,
you know, and again, like back to the whole nerdy compound interest calculator stuff. Like, if you can get market rates of return, you get some pretty substantial numbers still. Like, you don't need to be Warren Buffett. Like, if you want to be a billionaire, you probably do need Warren Buffett type returns for a long time. But, you know, to get to some fairly substantial numbers, just as an individual investor, like market rates of return will get you there, I think. And there's even sort of quote value investors that I follow that have a kind of similar approach. Like Phil Town talks about having this 10% sort of risky business portion of the portfolio. Phil Town's definition of sort of risky business is still, I would say, very conservative. It's like, you know, they've got the median moat management, margin of safety all ticked off, but maybe they have like 50% more debt than his usual threshold. So he'll put that in the risky business portfolio, that type of stuff. But then you've got people like, Bill Miller, who sort of say like, you know, if you want to invest in crypto or something, just put 1% of your net worth into cryptocurrency. And he's yet to kind of hear a good argument against that. And he has been doing that for like a decade now, I think. And he's a billionaire as a result. Amazon helped a fair bit as well, but crypto's made him a lot of money too. So I can see the argument. I'm probably more on the Phil Town type side of those things at this stage.
You.
But
we got to get you. I think one of the reasons I came on the podcast today is to get Tom to get on this crypto wave, at least, you know, to get him just to nibble a little bit, just to see what, just test the water. Just, you ain't got to go in skinny dipping. We ain't doing that.
Well,
or just, you know, just put a toe in.
Well, I heard Guy Spier say the other day in an interview that he's bought cryptocurrency, which surprised me. And then he said, oh, it's $100. And this is a guy that manages like a $300 million fund or something. So,
like, why are you even mentioning it at that point? It's just like, what?
So I haven't done the maths, but if I take that same percentage allocation personally, we might be talking some pretty small numbers here.
This is like my personal mission is to get Tom to buy $1 of something, $1 of either. Well, personally, I'm biased towards Ethereum. So $1 of like Ethereum is some way, some shape, somehow is to get Tom to buy just $1. Now, the fees attached to it will probably push you over that $1.
Fees are $10.
Fees like $10 you buy for one the other day. So this is the crazy thing about like the crypto space. I was diving deep. I went on this rabbit hole and I dove deep into like not just crypto, but then getting into like DeFi and Web3 and all that stuff to understand more about it. And at one point I was like, I needed to make a transfer from my wallet into a new platform. And so to move the Ethereum from one platform to another, it was just like $50 worth of Ethereum. But the gas fees, which is basically like your transaction fees, it cost $15,000 to make that transaction. I was like, what is this? That was like the first time I'd ever like, I heard people talk about the gas fees so much and transaction costs, but then I actually saw it and I was just like, this has a long way to go before it becomes anything substantial, because this is way too expensive. And it's just the way that crypto is created right now and the way that it's done. It's just like, whoa, this is ridiculously expensive to be that. For $50, it's going to cost me $10,000. I ain't got that, first of all. Second of all, no, I'm not. It was just like, okay, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. But it's an interesting and weird world when you start learning about like DeFi and like DAOs and Web3 and all the things that is being built on top of it. It's very interesting, like the world of crypto. It's a different land, but I would say like I'm still like on the shores, and I have people out here that's all the way deep in it. Like my little brother is all the way into it, and I'm trying to learn a thing or two. I doubt I'll ever get to the point where I'm like, I'm comfortable making this more a bigger. Like it's never. Yeah. Right now, it's like 2% of my portfolio. Everything else is like I understand. I understand blue chip companies. I understand some growth companies. And that's where I will put most of my money in. The rest of it is just like, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, fair enough. I struggle with it. Maybe I'll go buy $50 of Bitcoin later or something. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out. But I don't know. I struggle with it because like, I mean, I've heard some very intelligent people give me some reasonably convincing arguments. Other arguments a lot less convincing, like it's just going up because it has done and it just goes up, right? That's not an argument I want to hear. But like with an individual company, if I do enough work and it's a simple enough business and the price makes sense, like I might put 10% of my net worth or maybe even more into that one company. And a lot of the work that I'm doing around that is to really try and understand the downside and figure out like if everything goes wrong, where could this maybe go down to? Like how much can I lose? Like, whereas crypto, I think a lot of people, and even in stocks really, people are more focused on how much can I make and am I going to get rich tomorrow sort of thing. But I struggle to see the floor, I guess, in terms of like how low crypto could go if this thing goes south. So just to see how it works.
I'm not even going like crypto is the ultimate, can get 80% can be wiped out tomorrow for any reason. Which is the crazy thing is like there are whale accounts in crypto. And if those whale accounts decide, I want to take a bit of this money out, that would literally wipe out a lot of these currencies fast. And so, I think it goes back to what you said of, and I love Howard Marks for this. Like Howard Marks always talks about, it's not about the upside. The upside will take care of itself. It's like, you got to manage your downside risk and the downside potential. And I mean, and that's one thing that, I mean, I talk about like, yeah, I'm going to invest in this company and that company and this fund company, and it's crazy. But even when I say I'm investing in it, it doesn't mean I'm putting like a large portion. It's literally like, oh yeah, here's like $200 that I put in this business. And it's like, oh, cool. Like if something happens, if it gets wiped out, it's not going to destroy my entire future. So that's definitely, and that basically, because I was starting to get a little loose with things. And then I started listening to Howard Marks, and then on top of Tom in the background saying margin of safety, combine both of those, and you start acting up, you get right real quick. You get back on the straight and narrow and focus on what you need to focus on. But yeah.
Yeah. My videos are like AA meetings for crypto gamblers, maybe. Telling people to settle down.
Just like, calm down. This is the market. This is what you need to know. Relax, guys. Yeah. Remember what your risk is. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you want to, I want to just to maybe touch on a couple final things. One of the things I think we touched on a little earlier is kind of just setting some money aside for, setting some money aside early and having that compound into some, you know, hopefully large numbers over time. Yeah. But do you have any particular like motivation specifically around like what drives you to keep setting money aside? Like what's the end goal for you? Like, is it just getting to financial freedom and having more choices, or do you want to drive a Ferrari, or like what's the end game for Kelechi?
I mean, having a Ferrari would be nice. I mean, I'll drive it one time and take it right back to the shop, but you know, it would be nice. We actually, ironically, around close to my house, about 15 minutes away or so, we have a Porsche experience thing where you can drive a Porsche. And so I always tell people, like, I don't need to buy a Porsche. I can just go there and drive one. Nice. And be done. But yeah, I mean, for me, financial freedom is part of it. I mean, it's definitely part of it. But the other thing is, I say this on my channel all the time. It's a slogan that I came up with, and it's generosity is greater than greed. And the idea is, I love the idea of giving. And I, even up till now, like it's something that is regularly a part of my lifestyle. And so I was talking with somebody one time of like, what would it look like if I could just like donate and change, like build a school for out of nowhere or do something like that? That would be crazy and amazing. Ironically, my mom owns a school back in Nigeria. And, you know, you see like how long, like just $100, how far that can go in another country. And you're like, yo, what could I do if I had a little bit more money? And if I could do, if also my giving can be something that is on autopilot, where I don't have to think about it as much, but I could just do it any single time I want. So if I'm getting dividends from different companies that are just paying me out every single month, and I don't even have to be like, oh, will I have enough money to be able to give? Or it's just automatically just goes. Like, I don't even have to look at it. It's just donated to different initiatives is one of the things that really drives my investing, especially the individual portfolio. Like the idea of that is literally like, I want it to be so big that, or to be big enough to where I don't have to ever think about like, yo, I want to give to this cause, but I also need to pay my bills. I really want it to be like, I want to give to this cause. Oh, here's a check of like $20,000 because a company paid me because I owned shares in the company or something like that. So that's a big thing. And it's also like part of the reason that I even talk about investing and all of this stuff is I was listening to something in the United States. It's called NPR. And they were talking about the fact that in the United States, giving has continued to decline year over year over year. So people are giving less and less and less. And for some reason, that really bothered me. And so I was sitting at home and I was thinking like, so why don't people give? And I was going through the list and I thought about it. I was like, first of all, it's kind of like the thing of when you're on an airplane and they say like before you jump out of the airplane, before you put the mask on the child, first put the mask on yourself, because if you pass out, you can't help the child anyway. And so I was thinking about it. And then I figured out like a lot of people are in student loans. A lot of people are in crazy amount of debts. People don't know how to handle their finances. And so it just became like, yo, I need to talk about this stuff more to make it so that when people are presented with a chance to give to somebody, to help out a neighbor, to help out a cause that they love, they don't have to think about it twice. And I know it's like a grandiose, crazy idea goal, but if, I mean, even you starting off Movember, like that was like such an amazing thing to be able to be a part of just seeing like the power of when a group of people come together and say, yo, we're going to do this for this cause and for people to just be donating towards that cause. And so it's part of the whole financial thing of like getting people to the point where they have the ability to just give without having to think too much about it. And that's part of the main reason that I invest all this money. And then, of course, like I said earlier, investing and then stop. Like at some point, one thing I had to come to terms with, I listened to Monish Babrai's last talk that he did, I think at Oxford. And one of the things he talked about was you have to know yourself. And one of my favorite quotes of all time is from a guy named Seneca, and it's know thyself. And one thing I came to terms with was like, one, I'm not going to be Warren Buffett. I don't want to be Warren Buffett. I'm not going to be a deep value investor. And I was like, I'm okay with that because at some point I'm probably just going to be like, yeah, I'm done investing. I want to spoil my kids. I want to spoil my wife. I want to spoil other people around me. And so in order to do that, I may need the money that I'm investing in all these things to be redirected to something else and to know that regardless, everything is taken care of. So that's another reason why I'm doing this now rather than waiting until later and then being like, oh man, am I going to be able to retire? Can I just go do something else in my life? And it's like, no, I want the option to be able to do that. And also I just want to just make it rain on all the future parts of all the people I come in touch with in the future. So it's a long-winded answer to say generosity is the main reason that drives everything.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's important to recognize like a lot of us do have a head start in life. Like Buffett often talks about, you know, he got a head start just because of the womb he came out of, right? And the time in which he was born and the color of his skin even. And for me personally, I don't come from a super wealthy family or anything like that. I actually went to a school that basically was set up to give scholarships for education to boys from underprivileged families, essentially. So that's a story I probably want to tell on a podcast in a bit more detail one day. But that gave me like a really good head start. I got like a first class, this is high school days, first class high school education. Everything was paid for, like boarding, uniforms, which is an unheard of concept in the States, I think, but school uniforms.
Some schools have uniforms, but like I ain't going to those schools. Like see them sometimes when you're walking home from school, it's like, they lame, they have to wear a uniform.
Yeah, but man, like literally everything was covered, like boarding, food, uniforms, literally like socks and underwear. Like I think the only thing my parents ever had to buy was like school shoes, and that was about it. Like sports is covered, everything's covered. Even when I finished up at that school and then went off to university, based on the grades that I got in my last year of school, I think over my first 3 years of university, I was given like $6,000 or $7,000 from the trust board of that school. Like, so they're supporting students like after they leave and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's why I sort of resonate a lot with what Monish Babrai does as well with Dakshana, because it's almost like an Indian version of what I was involved with, except in India, like you mentioned before, very small amounts of money can make a massive difference. Like some of these kids are, getting into IITs and going off to work at Google and earn a couple hundred thousand dollars a year or something. And they're coming from families that make like $100 a month kind of thing. Yeah. So it's just like life-changing for entire communities. And just one final thing on that. You mentioned the Ferrari before, the school I went to. So the trust board, the way that they funded the school is they started out with basically a nest egg of someone left 100,000, I guess they were called 100,000 pounds back then in New Zealand before we had the New Zealand dollar. I think that came around like the 40s, but left 100,000 pounds. And I think it was 1906 the school was started. And a lot of that was invested in like farmland, essentially. And that farmland is now in like one of the most densely populated parts of Auckland, like the biggest city. So they own a bunch of extremely valuable real estate, which, on the Ferrari thing you mentioned earlier, includes the includes the land that there's a bunch of like Ferrari and Maserati dealerships dotted around. So they've got like Ferrari dealerships as tenants and stuff, like funding this boys' school, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just like you said with even Monish Pribadi, like literally those are the type of things where I'm like, yes, like there are people who are, I mean, there are some where it's just kind of like, I'm not a fan of that guy. But then on the other side, you see these guys who make it and then they take, like, for example, Peter Lynch is one of my favorite investors. And one of the things he's been big on is just like reinvesting back in Massachusetts schools, of making making things available for them up there. I mean, it was started by his wife. It's always interesting how a lot of these dudes, it's their wife that pushes them to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they take it and they run with it. I say it all the time. Like, I'm extremely blessed because of coming to the United States. Not a lot of people have that opportunity to come from Nigeria to the United States, going to a good school over here. And then my parents being able to support me through school, getting the scholarships that I did get, and then coming out and getting jobs, even though I may have hated the first one that I ever had, but then now having a job that allows me to be able to invest. And then also while I'm investing, to be able to give and help people as well. And so I think, like you said, is we are extremely privileged to have this opportunity. And it's one that we have to use to the greatest of our abilities. And along the ways, if we can help people, I think it's an obligation. Personally, I find it as an obligation that we have to help those that we can help. It doesn't mean we help every single person, but we make room to be able to help those that we can help.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's sort of like, you know, at a certain point, like, or up until a certain point, you got to look after yourself. And then, but if you could keep compounding and stuff to a certain point, you kind of like, I've got everything I need. Like, what do I do with the rest of it? And I think it's probably important to, even if it's small things, like, you know, like things like us working on the Movember campaign this month, even if it's small things like that, I think it's important to build the habits of like giving at least something, you know, early on. And then when you get to, it's a little like investing, like get the mistakes out of the way with small money in the early days rather than waiting till you're 40 or 50 and you've got a bunch of money that you need to invest. So I like that.
And then you start writing like $100,000 checks and you're like, oh, I got to actually like know. And it's interesting. For a lot of these organizations, I was talking to my sister and she's a doctor and she was talking about an organization her friend started. And now it's the organization is starting to pick up. But it's like when a friend started the organization, we're all given like $20, $30 and, you know, those type of things, getting it off the ground. And now it's massive. And so we're like, so now we know that she's going to use the money properly. So it's easy for us to be like, you need $2,000, like, yeah, here you go. Or when we get up there, it's like, oh, you need $100,000 for whatever. It's like, oh, here you go. And I think it's like you said, with the small money, you get to learn more about the different things that's happening. You get to learn more about what you really care about, which is something that I don't think people spend the time trying to figure out, like the things that are the most important to them. So it's one of those things that I just think more people should just take it and run with it and just be more generous with. Whether it's with your time or with your talents or with your treasures, there's so many ways that we can give. It doesn't necessarily have to always be money wise, but
I completely agree. Yeah. Look, man, this was a fun conversation. I know you mentioned before we hit record, you had maybe a couple other things you wanted to talk about. Did you have anything else you wanted to cover, or was that the crypto discussion?
That was the crypto discussion. Okay, my whole goal was literally like, I'm going to pop this on this conversation at some point and get Tom to talk about this a little bit, just to talk crypto and then get him to maybe buy some cryptocurrencies in the future.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to do some digging. I know a couple of friends own some cryptocurrency in New Zealand, so maybe I'll shoot them a message and figure out how to even do that. And I'll report back.
nice.
But this was fun, man. I really appreciate your time and coming on to the podcast. For anyone that wants to actually check out our Movember campaign, I'll leave some links in the description for that, or the show notes if you're just listening to the audio version of the podcast. But where can people go to follow you if they want to see you or hear more from you, Kelechi?
Yeah, so you can find me at KelechiWaba.com. I actually like made a whole website because people kept on asking me that question. But I'm also on YouTube, same name, on TikTok, the same name, on Instagram, by Kelechi Iwaba on Instagram. But yeah, and I mean, I do a podcast called the Rambling Mind Podcast. You can find it on basically every platform that you listen to podcasts on. And then I've been writing a newsletter recently just to get myself to think more and put my thoughts down on paper. So if you're interested in the psychology of money and why we spend what we spend on our dollars, check out the newsletter. I'm terrible at writing, but learning slowly how to write properly and to entertain people in writing as well. So if you want to check that out, it's on Substack and it's also just my name. So, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like it. Well, thanks very much, Kelechi. This was fun. And yeah, we've got some more Movember live streams coming up soon, but we'll have to get you back on the podcast at some point too.
Heck yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I made it. I'm going to tell my mom, Mama, I made it. I made it on Investing with Tom's podcast. I made it. We here now. But yeah.
I like it. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right.